For the rest of this hour, Compiling the Language of Science. The American Heritage Dictionary of Science hit bookstores this week. In between its covers, everything from ablation to zooplankton. Or is it zooplankton? I think it's zooplankton. Well, we'll find out for sure because we have an expert with us. And we want to hear what some of your favorite science words are. Give us a call. And how about some new science words you'd like to hear? What words have you recently noticed creeping into our common vocabulary? Maybe you can help sow the seeds for the next edition of this dictionary. Please do. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And joining me to talk more about words is my guest, Joe Pickett. He's the vice president and executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary series published by Houghton Mifflin. He joins me by phone from Boston. Thanks for talking with us today, Dr. Pickett.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Is it Dr. Pickett?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Okay. Where does your doctorate in? Or are you a physician who turned into an editor?
No, I have a doctorate in English language and literature.
That counts. That counts. I just want to make it clear we're talking to different doctors here.
Yeah.
So anyway, why do we need a separate science dictionary? It's a pretty thick book, but don't most of these words fit in the regular dictionary?
Yeah, they do. But the problem with that is that in a regular dictionary, there isn't the space to really explain what the words mean in greater detail, to go in greater detail about how they relate to other words in science. So making a book like this allowed us to really try to get at the core lesson inherent in each word.
Right. Now, I just was asking whether it was zooplankton or zooplankton. Do you know off the top of your head, or shall we turn to page...
It's one of the last words,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too hard to find. Okay, according to page 687, we've got zooplankton.
Right. And I think both pronunciations are correct, but... the zooplankton pronunciation is the one that's more, traditionally associated with science. So that's why that's
now. That's now. There's an interesting point. Who is the final arbiter? Because I had occasion a couple of weeks ago to talk about a small worm that I was always thought was a nematode, but I heard somebody else refer to it as a nematode. So I went to the dictionary. It didn't happen to be yours, but I went to another dictionary, and it said nematode. And I thought I'd better check in your dictionary, and it says nematode. But I talked to my freshwater biologist friends, and I have a legion of those, and they say nematode. So how do you make the call on something like that?
Well, we have a pronunciation editor who investigates things like that and actually calls up scientists and asks, how do you pronounce this word? Is the word pronounced, variously? Quite often, a lot of these scientific words do have more than one pronunciation.
Really? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what in the case of a tie, you have to pick your expert. You call one person, you get one answer. You call somebody else, you get another answer.
Well, then we try to include both pronunciations,
uh-huh.
but without, going overboard and including, four or five for every word that can be... more than anyone wants to hear.
Exactly. Well, I did mention at the top of the hour the question about Diplodocus, and according to your dictionary at least, it's Diplodocus, which, in case you weren't aware, is a very large herbivorous dinosaur of the genus Diplodocus of the late Jurassic period. So now people are up to date on the Diplodocus question. How do you decide when it's time to put a new word into the dictionary?
excuse me, my voice is a little weak because I am recovering from the flu, believe it or not.
Perfect.
we read scientific publications, especially, specific ones, and we look for new words. We familiarize ourselves with the words that we have already in the dictionary, and, so we read articles and, listen to the radio and wait for new words, such as avian flu, which is not a word that's in our dictionary now.
Yeah, so it sounds like we'll be looking for a new edition with that word in it. Okay, well, let's see what our callers have to say. And just to remind everybody, our number is 1-800-989-8255. And let's first go to Carolyn in Paducah, Kentucky. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep. My favorite word, and it's been this for a long time, and it's an excellent insult, would be plasmodium slime mold.
Ooh, plasmodium. Ooh, yeah. That's a good word. Let me see what the dictionary has to say about plasmodium. Hold on just a second. I'm pretty fast.
I think you have to look that up under slime mold.
Really? Because isn't am I getting confused? But isn't plasmodium falciparum the causative agent for malaria? Here, plasmodium, a mass of protoplasm having many cells, nuclei, but not divided into separate cells. You're right. That sounds like a slime mold. Oh, and there's plasmodial slime mold. That's here, too. But it's not plasmodium. I'm getting myself confused. Falciparum. It's something else, falciparum. What is it? Somebody will call and tell us.
I can tell you. There are two kinds of slime molds. There's the cellular slime mold and plasmodial slime mold. And the plasmodial ones exist as a mass of amoeba-like protoplasm. That's called a plasmodium.
Right.
And they contain many nuclei within a single cell membrane. And then, it spreads out over a long area, a wide area, and, digests food that along the way as it kind of slowly moves along. And once they stop moving, then they start growing these structures that are spore-producing stalks. So they're very weird creatures.
Okay. I appreciate that, Carol, and thanks very much for your call. And we're talking about weird new world words, and I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I checked here, and malaria, I did have it right. It says in your book, malaria, an infectious disease of tropical areas caused by the parasitic infection of red blood cells by a protozoan of the genus Plasmodium.
Right.
So I'm feeling okay about my recollections now. Okay, so Karen from Phoenix, Arizona, welcome to the program.
Hi. Myxomatosis. It's a very simple one. But I was very upset that nobody in America knew it when we played a game at Christmas.
Really? Myxomatosis?
Yes, or myxomitosis.
Joe Pickett, does that one that you have at the tip of... No. I don't
I've
see it in
since
here.
I've known it since I was about five.
What is it?
It's a disease in bunny rabbits, and they have mitomas, and they go blind and they die.
That's not.
And it is in the dictionary.
It's a funny word, but sad consequences.
Yeah, exactly. I've known it since I was a child.
All right, Karen, you've thrown down the gauntlet. How do you respond, Joe Pickett?
I just want you to tell the whole of the U.S. Myxomatosis.
Okay. All right. Consider it done. Joe Pickett,
thank
any
you.
Thoughts? You're welcome.
We don't have that word in the science dictionary we just published. We might have it in our general dictionary. The closest we have is myxomycete, which, believe it or not, is another name for a plasmodial slime mold.
I think we're stuck in a bit of a rut here. Let's see if Mark from Petaluma, California, can get us out of our rut. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your word or question?
Well, my word is a word that I've always liked just because of the way it sounds, and it's schistosomus reflexus.
Schistosomus reflexus. All right. Do we have?
Boy.
I never heard of that one. I've heard of schistosomiasis.
Yeah, I have too.
What is it?
It has nothing to do with schistosomiasis. Schistosomus reflexus is essentially when a calf that it develops in the uterus of the cow, and it develops congenitally abnormally, and essentially it's turned inside out. When it's developing, the legs are kind of pointing opposite direction they should be, and the intestines are on the outside of the calf rather than on the inside.
Okay. All right. Well, there we go. At least it isn't a slime mold, right, Mark?
Not a slime mold.
Thanks. Thanks very much. Joe Pickett, what's your favorite science word at the moment? We heard from Mark. Which one do you like?
Well, one I like a lot is mitochondrion.
Mm-hmm.
The power plant of cells, because it's a neat word, and I think the word goes back to Greek that means thread grain, and it looks like a grain, but it has what looks like threads in it, and those are the internal membranes. And I like the word a lot because it's a very neat sounding word. It sounds powerful, it does, you know, it's an amazing thing. It breaks down the food particles that come into the cell and turn them into chemical energy to power all of the different reactions and protein building, you know, reactions that occur in the cell.
A power-hungry science dictionary editor. Well, I was just looking to see if you have one of my favorite words, and you don't, which is ululate or ululate, which is the shrieking of that you hear from certain monkeys. But what the heck? It's a good word, you know, and you can't have everything, right? You do have umbel.
Right.
You have umbel, and you have undertow and ungulate, so
yeah,
not bad. All right, well, Joe Pickett, thank you very much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. Joe Pickett is the Vice President and Executive Editor of the American Heritage Dictionary Series, published by Houghton Mifflin. Mifflin, thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Kevin Wade is our Technical Director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick, Paul Masiello, and Rigo Cardi in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarians Key Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. If you have comments or questions, write to us at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. For internet mail, you can email us. The address is scifry@npr.org. Check out sciencefriday.com for more information and links to today's program. You can listen to past editions of Science Friday online or take them with you from audible.com or the iTunes Music Store. And check out Science Friday's Kids Connection, free curriculum materials for teaching science using Science Friday. Just click on the teacher's link on sciencefriday.com. Ira Flatow will be back again next week. For NPR News in New York, I'm Joe Palca.